I'm Steve Potter, and welcome to Cityscape. Before I die, I would, well, what would you do? The Before I Die project can be found in over 50 countries and is now coming to St. Louis. Later, more on this interactive public art project. We'll also meet Ben Hilliker, who's written a children's book based on the true story of a couple who found and restored a 1927 touring car, later the tale of Willy Willys. But first, Mo Rocca is a regular on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which airs on St. Louis Public Radio Saturday mornings at 11 o'clock. On television, he's a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning with Charles Osgood and has his own food series on the cooking channel, My Grandmother's Ravioli. Mo Rocca, welcome to Cityscape.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here.
What brings you to town?
Well, I am doing a story for CBS Sunday Morning on the history of the word or expression, okay. And okay, it's not clear if it really is a word or an expression or an exclamation. And there is an author at McMurry College, a professor in Jacksonville, Illinois, who wrote a book on the subject. And it's the kind of story I love doing, especially for Sunday Morning. Not late-breaking news necessarily, but something that matters to people, whether they realize it or not, that okay is something we say constantly and turns out to be much more adaptable than I even appreciated.
Well, you're all about that pop culture thing, huh?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I'm about, in this case, about something that is a part of our lives day in, day out, again, whether we know it or not. So.
Well, I read something online that you'd written, I think, just a couple of days ago. I don't even know what it is. So what's this cronut craze?
Well, this is – I live in New York and I have to apologize for sometimes the excesses that go on in New York and they get reported as if maybe they're nationwide trends. But there is a combination of a croissant and a donut called a cronut that a chef – in New York created a few months ago, and now people are lining up at 5:30 in the morning to get it. I mean, it's a real feat that what he pulled off, that he's getting people to line up for hours in the morning and sometimes walk away empty-handed. But it's a donut that has dough, a filling that's as soft and inside as soft as a croissant, filled with cream and with fruit. The fruit changes every month. They go for $5 a piece, but on the street they're selling for about $250. Now, that's just insane. I'll even say it. I'll step out of my objective reporter role and say that that is insane to spend $250. And the chef, by the way, says do not take a cronut from scalpers because you don't know where their hands have been.
I guess I should say okay.
Okay. No, that's one of those – well, you can say okay, the sarcastic okay. Okay.
Right.
Or if you really like it or you want to celebrate it, you could say okay.
Well, I don't think that's something that's hit St. Louis yet, this cronut craze. And probably never will.
Probably not. And you've got good sweets here. The Fountain, right? The restaurant Fountain on
– Fountain on Locust.
On Locust has great ice cream.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
You've been to St. Louis before. In fact, for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me – it was broadcast here a couple of times, most recently, just a few months ago, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
So you very familiar with our town?
I want to be more familiar with it. I haven't been up in the Arch yet. I want to do that. I understand that you can get into it sounds like it's like what a miner would get into to go way down deep, but you'd be going up, I guess, and well, over. So I'd like to do that. I know there are little windows at the top.
It's a tiny little elevator, and it shifts as you
okay.
go up.
And do you have one of those headlamps on while you're in there? I want to go to the farm where Ulysses S. Grant, excuse me.
Grant's farm. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that was really Julia, his wife's family's farm. Is that right?
I'm not sure.
I think it was. I want to there are a lot of things I want to do. I've been to the cathedral. It's really beautiful in St. Louis.
Basilica. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a basilica. I didn't
cathedral
realize
Cathedral Basilica.
That. Okay. Well, right. Or the basilica is really beautiful too.
Right.
You should check out the cathedral. It's amazing.
Hey, listen, you have an interesting background. You grew up in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. right? And acting was a big part of your life. Well, I guess it still is.
Yes. I thought I wanted to be on Broadway. And
you were.
I have been on Broadway in the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, which I loved. But then I got into this world that that probably always existed, this sort of comedy, news – sort of that kind of hybrid pretty early on and have sort of stayed in it. It's a great place in which to tell stories, and that sounds a little pretentious, but that's the best way I can put it.
Not at all. Well, you had some runs like on The Tonight Show and The Daily Show.
Uh-huh.
How did you get there?
Well, my first on-camera job was actually The Daily Show, and I got that partly because I'm a presidential history buff and was traveling around the country visiting the homes and grave sites of presidents that you can't remember were president. The guys between Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt, you know, with all the facial hair, a couple of them were were knocked off by anarchists. And I found that at those historic sites, you met people that really had to believe in the president that they were helping to memorialize. So for instance, if I went to Indianapolis to the home of Benjamin Harrison, and I met a woman there that was so obsessed with Benjamin Harrison, she had been volunteering there for 22 years, and she'd put on a Victorian gown. And the tour she gave of the Benjamin Harrison house in the old North Side section of Indianapolis on Delaware Avenue was so great that by the end of it, you wanted to sandblast Mount Rushmore and replace it with Benjamin Harrison. And I fell in love with characters like those, that was the way that I actually got onto The Daily Show, because I met a guy in Marion, Ohio, the home of Warren G. Harding, that was so obsessed with Warren Harding and his wife that he would dress up as Mrs. Harding to give tours of the house. But it wasn't just a shticky drag queen act. He was actually really good at it and drew you in. I love stories like those that maybe have a part that on the surface seem a little silly and wacky, but there's actually real substance and material at the heart of them.
You have in your background too. You did a lot of children's related programs, like the one on PBS, Wishbone. Was
uh-huh.
that it? And some others. So, are you interested in? You must be interested in kids.
Sure, but I mean, you know, this show Wishbone that I did on PBS in the mid '90s. I have to say it was a good show about a Jack Russell Terrier live action show, a dog who in his dream life became the heroes of classic novels in order to familiarize kids between the ages of 6 and 11 with the themes of those books. And I think it worked, and I think it was really entertaining. But what it did for me personally is it really taught me how to tell a story, and I know I can work on that even more. But taking great books, classic novels that you can return to over and over again, and breaking them down into a 30-minute episode for kids of that age is an exciting challenge, because kids don't respond to bad storytelling. They'll instantly become bored. They're a great barometer. So bad writing, bad narrative writing involves just adding filler, having people just talk just to fill up space. Kids demand that the story remain dynamic, and stories should be dynamic. So to take a novel like Don Quixote or Treasure Island, a whole range of them, and make it into 30 minutes that really move, and to keep a kid that's 9 years old interested in that, you know you've done something right.
So if you can hold a kid's attention.
Yeah. In my career, I've had a lot of different jobs already, and I always go back to that experience. And so on CBS Sunday Morning, if I tell a story between 4 minutes or 11 minutes, which is a big luxury if you can go on that long, I always go back to those skill sets I learned from adapting classic novels into kids' shows. And in my cooking show, which I'm very proud of, which is not really a cooking show but more about people's lives, the same skills I hope I bring to bear.
Let's talk about that. You're, I guess, just finished your first season?
Well, the first season finished airing. We just finished shooting our second season, so it's very exciting.
My grandmother's ravioli.
Yeah.
So, you know, you deal with recipes, as you say, but it's also dealing with people's grandparents and hearing their stories. That's
yeah.
what it's really about.
Yeah, the inspiration was my grandmother had this terrific grandmother. I was very close to her, and she made these fabulous Sunday dinners for the family. And if I had a time machine, I would go back 30 years and I would show up at her apartment at least 15 minutes early before eating to learn a little about what she was doing in the kitchen. She worked a full-time job at a department store in downtown DC, but she still insisted on making these big dinners because she wanted to. But I wish I could that ravioli she made, and it's called my grandmother's ravioli, but the ravioli she made was one way in which she showed how much she loved us. It was a lot of work, all the dinners that she would make. And she otherwise was a very low-key person. But it was there was something almost flamboyant about some of the dinners that she would make. But I very fondly remember those ravioli. And so, you know, I don't have her to learn from anymore. So I thought I'd do the next best thing, which is learn from other people's grandparents. So every episode, I go to a different grandparent around the country to their kitchen, and they teach me a treasured family recipe. But it's really – it's less about how to cook than why they cook. And I've learned so much and from the people that have been on this show, and it's been really wonderful.
I really relate to you about that. I was close to my grandmother. In fact, I moved in with her and lived with her in her house for a couple of years when she was 95. And she was an old German lady and cooked a lot. But it's the story she used to tell, and I could kick myself for not writing all those things down.
Same here. And it's nice that at least that with these episodes that I'm doing, that this material is on tape. Our first season, we had a great German grandmother. Her name, Cookie Oma. This woman was such a terrific character. And she taught me to make rouladen, rolled steak, and Pflaumenkuchen, a plum tart. And we had sauerkraut on the side, of course, but it was absolutely wonderful.
We're talking with Mo Rocca. I found on the internet, I don't know where it came from really, but some site called Brainy Quotes, and they have a bunch of your quotes. So I thought maybe I'd just throw a couple out at you. And
I hope they're real.
Well, you can.
They may not be, but
you can verify them or not.
Or
see
I
if you have a comment.
I can co-opt them if they're good and I didn't actually say them.
These are attributed to you. Hypocrisy is great fodder for comedy.
Yeah, I don't think that's I don't think that's a particularly good quote. I didn't steal it from anyone. I did say it. No, I think that, you know, politicians are funny because politicians, a lot of them are like bad actors. They're trying to convince you that they're somebody that they're not. Oftentimes they're trying to convince you that they're just like you and me. And it's funny to watch someone who doesn't have the talent to really convince you of the role they're trying to play. And there's just something funny and klutzy about it. But when I was talking about hypocrisy there, I think that the disparity between what a person says and does is funny. That's why as distressing as a lot of scandals with politicians who
– Well, look what's going on in New York. Yeah.
Well, right. Exactly. And, you know the as distressing as it is to watch a politician's family fall apart – unfortunately, there's also something kind of funny about somebody who spent all this time telling you they're a great family man. And then it turns out they have a wilder sex life than you could ever dream of having.
Let me throw two more quotes out to you. Digital television, satellite radio, video games, iPod, so much media. Do books even matter anymore? And that interested me because you've written a couple, or at least one book yourself. So
I don't remember ever saying that. That sounds
– Oh, really?
Yeah, that sounds like – I don't know. That sounds very kvetchy or something.
Well, maybe you didn't. I said I pulled this off the internet, so who knows?
Yeah, no, but I think the statistics do show that people are reading less. So.
One more. Supposedly, you said this. If there's one thing that everyone can agree on, it's that, right or wrong, they hate the press. And I wondered if you talked to Charles Osgood about that.
Yeah, no, I did not talk to Charlie about that. I'm not sure. Yeah, I think everybody loves to beat up on the press. So I imagine if you're an embattled politician, that can be a good scapegoat.
You have been a gay rights advocate. And in fact, I read
– Okay, go on. Yeah.
Well, I read that you were at the Stonewall Inn, I guess it was a couple of years ago, when New York passed marriage equality.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering what that meant to you and what that was like.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was such a momentous occasion, and that I went down there as a private citizen and was happy about it. But I wouldn't describe myself as an advocate. I'm a little bit leery of joining really any movement. So
why?
I just think it's good to remain skeptical and not to jump on the train. And I would just say that advocate to me sounds like an unpaid job, but a job nonetheless, a position somebody's assuming. And, uh-huh. When appropriate, I'll try to say and, what I believe, but I'm really skeptical about – I think if you're a public figure and I'm flattering myself probably if I call myself a public figure. But if you have if you have any kind of megaphone more than citizens who aren't in media have, then you really, really have to be careful about taking advantage of that because, you know, I suppose it's a privilege. So I oftentimes think I probably err on the opposite side and say less.
Uh-huh. You tweet. Is this right? Did you have something like 500,000 followers?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
That's amazing, kind of, huh?
Well, now, I'm skeptical about that too, honestly. I don't know what that means.
Who's really out there? Well, I happened to go to your account there and I read something you wrote, I think it was yesterday. You tweeted that you're on the tarmac, the weather looks dangerous, and the pilot seems scared. Everything worked out all right, though.
That was just to get to it. That was really because I wanted to mention Karen Black, who had just
– Right. You said you were missing Karen Black.
Well, because she was the flight attendant in Airport 75, and she did such a great job landing that plane. So I thought if anything goes wrong, I hope we have a Karen Black caliber flight attendant on this plane.
One more thing I want to ask you about, and this is really important. I'm being sarcastic. What's this about your hair and your iPhone?
Oh, I'm not sure. I think that was a USA Today interview.
Well, they were talking about that you use your iPhone to make sure you're properly groomed.
I am so not tech savvy, so I use my my iPhone ends up becoming I use it the most sophisticated thing I use my iPhone for is as a mirror. I'll put on the camera thing if I'm getting ready to go on camera for something and I think I look like hell, then I'll use it kind of as a mirror.
Well, it's been really fun meeting you. We enjoy you on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and I never miss a Sunday morning. So,
well, watch my cooking show. It's really great. It's heartwarming and hilarious. And unlike most unscripted television, this actually features people you'd want to be related to. Most reality TV, right. So-called reality TV, features freaks, people that you wouldn't want to know,
right.
But you might want to laugh at on TV. The grandmothers and grandfathers are decent, wonderful people on this show, and people. So I'm shamelessly flacking that right now on your show because it's a good program.
That's my grandmother's ravioli on the Cooking Channel, yep. And you'll be starting your second season
in October. That's right; it starts airing.
Well, Mo Rocca, it's so nice meeting you. Thanks for coming by and seeing us today.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
And next on Cityscape, the tale of Willie Willies, and later. What would you do? The Before I Die Project. This is St. Louis Public Radio.